You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Yesterday, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors decided to formally oppose a state bill. It's being called the most controversial housing bill in decades. The transit-rich housing bonus, if passed by the state legislature, would force cities and counties to allow for dense and tall housing near public transit, no matter what local laws say. Okay, KALW's housing reporter Liza Veal is here to tell us what this bill could mean for the Bay Area and why San Francisco leaders have put up such a fight against it. Liza, this bill has actually gotten quite a lot of attention all over the place.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot of national coverage. The New York Times called it a bold, divisive plan. And locally, it's brought out a really big clash.
Start doing some research. Look into who actually get those homes. Look actually who's behind the bill.
Yesterday, there were dueling protests outside City Hall. There was shouting and name-calling. It got pretty vicious. Signs were slapped down to the ground. The supporters of the bill were called white supremacist colonizers for shouting over the folks that were speaking out against the bill, some of whom were elderly, immigrant, low-income families.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's this bill about that's so contentious?
Okay, so this bill is trying to kill two birds with one stone. It wants to make housing more affordable by making it easier to build and ease the shortage. And secondly, it wants to lower greenhouse gas emissions by building that new housing near public transit in order to wean people off driving.
Both of those seem like pretty desirable outcomes. How would it accomplish those?
Okay, so it changes zoning laws. Right now, cities only allow for tall apartment buildings and condos in certain parts of the city. Think about how most of the west side of San Francisco is small single-family homes, mm-hmm. or North Oakland, or basically all of Marin County. They're zoned to prohibit denser, taller development. Usually because that's the kind of neighborhood that residents want to preserve.
Yeah, it preserves that character.
Exactly. But so this bill would override those rules in areas near transit. So housing built within a half mile of a train stop or a quarter mile of a frequent bus stop would be exempt from most local zoning rules.
Which actually encompasses a whole lot of many of these neighborhoods because they're close to bus lines or train lines.
Yeah, I mean, analysis done by the city of San Francisco found that 90% of the city's residential parcels would be affected by the bill, meaning that their zoning restrictions would be replaced by the bill's sort of one-size-fits-all. So higher height limits, no more CEQA environmental review, no parking requirements. The bill in its current form gets rid of a lot of things that are obstacles to building, everything except affordability requirements. If those are in the local zoning, they would still apply.
Mm-hmm. Well, so groups like SPUR, San Francisco Planning and Urban Research, that advises the city in a lot of ways, I mean, they're really for dense growth. So it's as probably a good policy, right?
Yes, but so the thing is, San Francisco has spent years painstakingly crafting a plan for more density in a way that maximizes community benefits. Mm-hmm. So they say, we'll allow for X more stories on your building if you provide X additional affordable housing. That's additional to even the citywide requirements.
And this is actually something that Supervisor Katie Ting and former Mayor Ed Lee were working on before this came about.
And they finally came to a plan, but then under SB 827, that density bonus plan would be moot. And other cities that don't even have those plans, or maybe don't even have affordability requirements, they can still use zoning as a tool of leverage. So they can say, okay, we'll give you a height limit exemption if you throw in some affordability, but that leverage disappears when zoning restrictions disappear.
So if you end up losing some of these community benefits, then you have the raising of the concern about gentrification, which is obviously a big concern in the Bay Area. I'm picturing that if it suddenly becomes easier to build luxury condos that are tall and dense in places where it was impossible or at least hard, then people are worried that those new buildings will displace existing residents.
Yeah. So there are actually very strong tenant protections in this proposal. Developers who plan to demolish a rental unit would have to pay for the moving expenses and cover their rent for 3 years or more. And plus, renters would have the right to move back into the new development at their old rental price. And there's a lot of people who say instead of just opposing this bill, San Francisco should be trying to improve it. You know, there's still time. It's still changing. It's been changing constantly. But so, that's not what the Board of Supervisors did.
Mm-hmm. So those do seem like pretty strong rental protections. But people are still worried that new apartments are going to cause displacement.
Yeah, because new buildings don't just affect the individuals who are directly displaced. They do change the character of the neighborhood. And fancy new condos do tend to attract higher-end amenities and raise prices nearby. You know, the whole snowball of gentrification. And
so, snowball of gentrification.
The snowball of gentrification. And so there's a lot of low-income neighborhoods that have transit. You can think of West Oakland or Balboa Park in San Francisco. That would be made into targets for developers by this bill.
Because they're on transit lines.
Yeah, and because suddenly it would become possible or at least easier to build big lucrative developments in those areas. Here's how Supervisor Jane Kim put it.
When you give any land 10 more units, you're basically giving that owner more money. This is a giveaway. This is a giveaway to landlords and developers without asking anything in return for a city and community.
That's Supervisor and mayoral candidate Jane Kim. So why is this then considered a solution to the affordable housing crisis?
Ben, this is why the bill activates such a yimby-nimby fault line in the housing world. A lot of people testifying at City Hall in support of the bill argued that, yes, while it's true the new housing tends to make the immediate neighborhood more upscale, it also relieves overall demand. So for the region as a whole, and especially over the long term, it helps keep prices down. The state has these guidelines for how much housing each city should be building, and most cities are behind. So this is a way to force them to build.
Okay, but for the people living in really vulnerable neighborhoods, in the short term, they just might get priced out if all the rents are rising, right?
Yeah, so some people just think that this kind of market-based solution is the wrong approach to solving the housing crisis. Here's Supervisor Aaron Peskin at City Hall yesterday.
I think we should send a message to Sacramento that this dog does not hunt, and let's start over again. And if Sacramento wants to be helpful, help us address the Ellis Act, help us address Costa Hawkins, and send us a bunch of money so we can build more affordable housing.
All right, so that's how Aaron Peskin feels about this. Are there any other objections that you've heard?
Yeah, plenty of other objections are coming from people who live in fancy, exclusive neighborhoods that just don't want to see an influx of new people and traffic and tall buildings blocking their views. And since homeowners tend to vote at much higher rates, representatives tend to vote the way that they want them to. And some of the most vocal opponents come from Marin County. And that state senator that represents that county, Mike McGuire, he actually controls a committee that the bill would have to clear in order to make it to the legislature. So that's a really big hurdle.
And yet, this bill has gotten a lot of attention and clearly has quite a lot of support as a result. What do you think is going to happen with it at this point?
Well, I think it has a long shot, but I do think that the idea isn't going away. I mean, if California wants to meet its climate change goals, which are a 40% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from 1990 levels by the year 2030, if you followed that, it will have to change the way that we plan cities because cars are still the number one cause of emissions nationally. So we can't cut back on that until we have housing that's well served by public transit.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Liza.
Thank you.